Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to Hard Hits. I am your host, Derek Felix, and this is the podcast. And good evening, everybody, here on an overnight edition here of the podcast, Hard Hits Network. Derek Lux Felix here over in Staten Island, New York City. And plenty of stuff going on, obviously, in the sports world. So I've got a lot of stuff that I want to cover tonight. So I definitely want to get out to it. This is a podcast edition, so just going to give you my take on certain things and so you can check it out. And that's what I'm going to do. So a lot of stuff happening, between the NHL trade deadline, which is coming past. I certainly was pretty busy there with the Rangers making all sorts of moves, trading the captain, Ryan McDonagh, and continuing their rebuild with JT Miller to Tampa Bay. So they have a totally different look, and it's going to be a lot different for them, certainly, even though they finally had to break their 7-game losing streak the other night. For more information, you can always look and check out my blog, newyorkpuck.com, newyorkpuck.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. I am at New York Puck. So that's pretty simple, newyorkpuck. And you can follow me on the Twitter as well. And this is a podcast edition. There's plenty of stuff that I want to get to. First thing, I'm actually going to start off with, believe it or not, I'm going to start with the NCAA. College basketball conference tournaments have already started up. Big East regular season's ending pretty soon, as well as the ACC this weekend. And then the big tournaments for those conferences start, along with some other conferences. Some conferences are already underway. So you got the Northeast Conference, certainly. They're already underway. Wagner College had the best record in the Northeast Conference. And me being a local guy, from the Staten Island area, and with Wagner College beating Central Connecticut State to advance to the semifinals, I sort of like to see Wagner College punch their ticket. They're going to have to win two more games to give themselves a chance at that NCAA field of 68. It could be a play-in game, or maybe they'll get lucky and not be a play-in game. But I'm more of a traditionalist. I don't like the play-in game. I understand why they did it, to give some more schools a shot at it so they could at least play their way in. But I'm not the biggest fan of that first round, because to me it's not really a first round. It's like you still got to win. Although, remember Syracuse, they got in and then they made their big run to the Final Four. But it's not bad. I'm just not a fan of it. But seeing Wagner College have some success, that is very exciting to me as a fan. And a local hoops fan here in New York City, I'm very excited about that. So I'm really hoping that they can punch their ticket and give themselves a shot at the NCAA and get into that tournament. That would just be awesome. They've only been since I've been following. I think they've been in maybe twice, so I'm really excited about it. And I'm a big, college basketball guy. Anybody that knows me knows that I'm a huge college basketball guy. I don't watch as much as I used to, but I watch when I can. I watch Pac-12 games sometimes. I watch Big East, obviously, being a St. John's alum. I was pretty pumped up the other night with that win. That was a great win over Butler. Two overtimes went at Carnesecca Arena, the old alumni hall. Senior night for Ahmed, for a couple other guys, and for them to win without their best player, without Shamori Pons, that was terrific. That was tremendous. That was tremendous effort by them. I certainly want to commend Justin Simon. He played fantastic. That was a fantastic performance by him. What he finished with, 24. He was just absolutely clutch. They looked like they were done for in the final minute of regulation. They had led by 12 points, 35-23 in the second half, and Butler came all the way back. They looked like they were going to take it. Then St. John's was down 5 points in the final minute. They didn't panic and then get a rebound and just a money play by Simon, driving the lane and making the layup. And excellent defense, and they almost won the game at the buzzer on a steal. It went to first overtime. They had a six-point lead, and then Butler came back, and it would go to a second overtime. And it looked like they were going to fall short. But I'll tell you, Justin Simon would not let them lose this game. He was unbelievable, canning free throws, making tough drives, picked up a huge steal on a lob play and drew a foul. Marvin Clark certainly came up big as well, hitting some big free throws, coming up some big rebounds. Ahmed scored over 20. They did a great job. And Tariq Owens, fantastic as usual defensively with some big blocks. So, they don't have a lot of guys, obviously, that can score the ball. They weren't that deep to begin with. But to beat Butler the way they did in that fashion, that was a huge win. To win in the final home game on senior night and pull that out the way they did without Shamori Pons, who had to sit out the game with an injury, that was terrific. I was really pumped up. That's as pumped up as I've been about a St. John's game in a long time. The fans were really into it, and I was into it. I was excited, and it was great stuff, certainly. And yeah, it's been a rough year, obviously, for Chris Mullin and for St. John's, and it hasn't gone exactly as planned. But they did get their fourth win in the Big East. They got one more game to go, and they're right now they are at the 500 mark. So they got one last game, and then they got the Big East tournament, and away we go. And look, the loss to Marquette was a terrible loss. There's no doubt about that. They played miserable in that game. I was very disappointed by that effort. They ended up in Seton Hall. Seton Hall's a good team. They lost in overtime. And Seton Hall almost beat Villanova. They took them to overtime and lost by a point. So, of course, I wish they had gotten the split. They did not get the split. But what they got to do is let's finish strong. We got Providence in a rematch. They owe Providence for the fact that Providence kicked their butts and embarrassed them in the first Big East game of the season. They just killed them. It'll be a tough environment. It's at Providence. It's a noon game, so it'll be tough, certainly on Saturday at noon, but I'll be locked in. I'll definitely be locked and loaded to watch it and try to come out and finish strong here and get that fifth win. Go into the Big East tournament for a little bit of momentum. They can win that game. They win that game. That'd be six out of their final eight. What were they, 0 for their first 11 in the Big East where they had the big losing streak? That would be a great finish, including the statement wins that they had. against Duke and at Villanova and beating Villanova the way they did, that was horrendous. So this team is capable. I just hope, yeah, if Mullen is getting one, if he does get one more year, they have a deeper team. They gotta have a deeper team, because it can't just be five or six guys. You gotta have eight. You gotta go about eight deep to have any shot. That's how I put it, and that's what I have to say about St. John's. Look, I know it wasn't the season that I envisioned, that a lot of people envisioned, but sometimes these things take time. But seeing Shabari Ponce become the go-to guy, the star player, has been very rewarding, and it's been tremendous. So, I mean, for the most part, they've been competitive. There have been a couple of really bad games, the game against Marquette, the terrible game against Providence. That was brutal to watch. A couple of games where they just did not do the job, but for the most part, they've been competitive. They were competitive in both games against Nova. And Jay Wright always gives credit to St. John's for how hard they play, and there was no quitting these kids. And I want to see them. Look, I know that it's probably not going to happen. There's not going to be a miracle run. I don't expect that at all. They're ninth in the Big East, but I definitely would like to see what they can do. I'd like to see what they could do. If I had to point to some disappointments, it would be losing both games to DePaul. They did win. They won the second against DePaul. They did hold them off. But they lost both games to Georgetown. So obviously, you don't want to lose two games in a row to Georgetown. And he lost both games to Patrick Ewing and company. The second one, I think both of them were pretty closely competitive. The second one definitely was. Marquette, they split, I think, with them. But the performance last weekend, they just did not have it in that game. Providence is right on the fringe. I mean, so St. John's could do some damage here. You know, if they could find a way to pull a win at Providence, oh, it'll be tough. They have really good guards, as I remember, very athletic. So they're a tough matchup. Now, my question is, so how will St. John's adjust? It's been 2 months they play. So there is a chance for some redemption here, but they can't just shoot themselves out of it. You know, that game started out close and then they just got the doors blown off. They just imploded in the second half because it was close for a while, but they couldn't stop Providence offensively. So they got to play better defense. Seton Hall is 20-10. They're 9-8 in the conference. I have to think that they're in the tournament. But when I say in, they're probably maybe a 7, maybe an 8 seed right now. So, you know, I think they might still need a win in that Big East tournament. I mean, you know, Xavier's got the best record. They're up to 14-3. They actually got a better record than Villanova right now. They're up by a game on Nova for the conference. Creighton is third with the 10-7 conference record. Well, all three of those teams are tournament teams, 26-4, both Xavier and Nova. Creighton is 21-9. They're a tournament team. Then you got Seton Hall and you got Butler, teams that you expect to get in, but you know they might need to do a little bit more. I mean, after that, five might be the cutoff, and then Providence will have to probably finish really strong to have any chance. St. John's is 15-15. A lot of that had to do with their non-conference schedule. Right now, the Big Ten tournament's being played at the Garden. I want to talk a little bit about that, actually. So, tonight was the second round. The Big Ten has 14 teams now. So, there's a lot of teams in this conference. And it's not often that I talk about Rutgers when it comes to sports. You know, there hasn't really been a lot of stuff good that's gone for Rutgers, obviously. You know, they struggled all year. And them being in the Big Ten, that was a mistake, obviously, from them being Big Ten. But you know what? lo and behold, I mean, after they beat Minnesota, or they beat Indiana as a 14th seed, and the first 14th seed, obviously, to get to the quarterfinals, to reach the quarters. It's hard to believe there's 14 teams in the Big Ten. Big Ten, you might have it's Big Ten, Big 14, maybe you want to call it. But, you know, Rutgers is a team that's still three games under 500, 15 and 18. So, of course, they've struggled. Indiana is not classic Indiana, even though they were a 6th seed. They fell to 16 and 15. So, but Rutgers was very impressive. I watched I watched most of the second half, and they won 76-69, and they took it. They took it. That was the impressive thing to me. They didn't get lucky here. They won that game. They went out and they won the game, and that to me in itself was very impressive. I was very impressed with how they played. They certainly got some strong play from a couple of the players. Particularly, they have one guard that I from Florida that had a terrific game. I think he scored 27 points, 27, I think, to be exact. That was a terrific job, obviously. So 27, obviously. That would be 28, Corey Sanders, yeah, the kid from Florida. He had a terrific game, 12 out of 20. He was terrific. He made all sorts of big plays for them. Very athletic player, too. There was one sequence where Indiana, they tried to trap him. They were looking to foul him, you know, down maybe five or six. They were down five. And he just ducked underneath two guys. And then Monster Jam basically posterized another Indiana guy underneath the basket. Terrific, obviously. He was terrific in the game. You know, every time Indiana, you know, a shot, make a three-pointer to make it close, Rutgers responded. They did what they had to do to win. And that was the thing that I came with. That was the thing I took away, is that they made the plays. And that's what you're looking for. You got to make the plays to win these games. Now, you look at the box score of this game. So the other four starters for Rutgers, including Coots Williams, the kid from Brooklyn who made a couple of big free throws, the kid from Brooklyn. 18 points combined for the other four starters. Corey Sanders had 28. So he had 28 out of the 46 from the starting five, playing 34 big minutes for them. He's terrific. And they got big play off the bench from Freeman. Freeman had a really good game, 15 points and 8 rebounds. Deshaun Freeman, a senior. And against Minnesota, he had 11 rebounds and 7 points. So he's really good on the rebounds. He averaged 11 points a game and over 7 rebounds during the season. So those were the two big players. Amorui had 9 points and 6 rebounds. I mentioned Mike Williams, another senior, a kid from Bishop Lachlan, averaged 8 and 3.4 rebounds. He had 6 points in this game, including a couple big free throws and a big rebound, salted away. Very good win. And it's not a classic Indiana team, as I said. Indiana really just has not had the same program. Tom Crean had a couple of good years for them. But outside of that one miraculous run where they made the actual final, they made the final. Yeah, I mean, they really haven't had that much of a program since Bob Knight coached them. They haven't really been the same program. But now Rutgers is going to have to go up against Purdue. And that's later. It would be later tonight because we're on the East Coast. So tomorrow, well, it's really tomorrow night. Basically, they're playing Purdue. Purdue is really, really tough. Purdue is the 3 seed. They're obviously a lock for the tournament. They're going to be a 2 or 3 seed, probably about a 3 seed, I would say. Isaac Koff, You got two brothers that put up good numbers. They're very good. And that's not going to start until about 9:05 approximately tomorrow night if it tips off on time. You know, the Big Ten's got, let's see, you got four quarters, all right? So two will be in the afternoon. The other two will be at night, so probably 7 o'clock and 9. So that probably will start a little late, I would think so. But, yeah, I think it's a great job, you know, out of Rutgers. You have to give them a lot of credit. They didn't obviously have a big season, but and it's tough for them to compete against these teams. But you've had some teams that lost that weren't expected to lose, like Maryland lost, so they're out of the tournament. So and Nebraska, of course, you had couple of other teams that moved on. Penn State was able to advance, so they're in the quarterfinals as well. So I want to actually go through the matchups. So I'm going to try to do that right now and try to look at the matchups. Since I actually decided to talk about this, we'll look at the matchups for a second. So the matchups are this. You've got the Wisconsin Badgers. They were the 9 seed. They were able to beat Maryland. So they beat Maryland, and Wisconsin will be taking on the number 1 seed, Michigan State. Michigan State with all sorts of rumors circulating about their program. I don't know how that's going to go. They have a big-time player there, big-time freshman. There's all sorts of rumors there. There's all sorts of rumors going on with the NCAA right now with the whole investigation. But Michigan State obviously going to be a big favorite in that game. That's an early game today. It's a noon game. So if you weren't doing anything, I mean, hell, you could go to the Garden or go to a bar and watch it. Probably be fun. You got a good matchup, very good matchup between Michigan, who had to go to overtime to beat Iowa. They went to overtime. They were pushed to overtime by Iowa, but did win. And they're going to take on the number 4 Nebraska Huskers, Cornhuskers. So that's a good game right there. That's the second game. Now, the night games. The first one is 6:30. The first matchup is Penn State, or third matchup, Penn State, number 7, against number 2, Ohio State. That could pull a surprise right there. And then, of course, the heavy underdog, the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, going up against Purdue Boilermakers. That's the lineup. So, the reason these games are being played now as opposed to like next week is because they decided to play the tournament at the Garden. I don't know how the Big Ten decided that the Garden was the place to play this tournament. The Garden holds so many events. The Big East is going to be at the Garden next week. So obviously the Big Ten couldn't play at the same time with them having the Big East for the 36th or 37th time. They had to play the Big Ten earlier. So that's exactly what they're doing. You know what that means, though, is that there's going to be a layoff. There's going to be a layoff for whoever wins the Big Ten. Now, is that layoff going to be good or is it going to be bad? That's a real good question, because that's a long layoff if you think about it. But then again, teams in the Northeast Conference have that same layoff to prepare teams who play in the MAC. You know, so some of these early tournaments, there is that layoff. But for the schools that are busier and used to being on a different schedule, is that going to be a factor come bracket time? I can't really say. But that is your Big Ten right there. So give my take right there on the Big Ten a little bit on the Big Ten right there. It is Derek Felix here and you there as we talk on the podcast here. And it's definitely been a lot of fun talking, certainly. So now we've done a lot of college basketball. Obviously, the ACC is going to be coming up next week as well as the Big East. Big East runs from March 7th, that would be next Wednesday, to Saturday, March 10th. And I think the ACC is running the same time. They might be in Barclays. So I really don't like when they change locations, to be honest. I don't think the Big Ten has a, should be at the Garden, but I understand why they would want to play at the Garden. So it's understandable. It's the same thing with the AC. They're going to be at the Barclays Center. You know, in the old days, the ACC would play in Greensboro, which is a better, which is really the closer location. But there you got a lot of fans that will travel. Obviously, Duke fans travel very well. Syracuse fans certainly are familiar with the Big East. For playing in the Big East, they're familiar with the Garden, so they travel. They travel very well. Carolina will travel. So you'll have your schools. You'll have some of those classic schools traveling. NC State's actually NC State. As well as Clemson, some of the other schools that are part of that ACC. So it's going to be a little different, certainly. But in terms of Wagner, I actually do want to update, you know, the Northeast bracket before I move on and talk some NHL and talk some and other topics, other hot topics, including spring training. So this Northeast Conference. Right now, it's right there for Wagner, and I'm hoping that they'll be able to cash in. And it's always exciting, you know, when you have the local team there. So, and already there were a couple upsets. I guess the night before there were a couple upsets. And that's the whole thing about this, about these tournaments, is that you don't know how things are going to play out. You really don't. That's why you worry about it. You know, Wagner had to hold off Central Connecticut, so they were able to win. But both St. Mary's and St. Francis, you lost. Robert Morris was able to win, beating defending champs. And Fairleigh Dickinson was able to take down St. Francis. LIU still in the tournament, too. They beat St. Francis of Brooklyn. So you got a couple of local schools. So the next games on the schedule, you've got LIU taking on Fairleigh Dickinson of Teaneck on Saturday in the first semifinal, and that tips off at 12. Second semifinal is at Grimes Hill. Yeah, and both games will be on ESPN3. I don't know if I get ESPN3, but Wagner, if you're not doing anything, they're hosting Robert Morris with a tip-off at 2 o'clock p.m. this Saturday. Grimes Hill. I know where Grimes Hill is. Great location, obviously, even though it's pretty busy. It's pretty probably be very tough to park, but Wagner is trying to get back, and so if they could win that game, I think that'll be a tricky game. Robert Morris is usually a tricky team during this tournament, as I remember. So if they could get to the final, you know, they would host it probably because they are the top seed. So. But they have to. They have another game. They got to win. They're 22-8 on the season, and they only won their game by what, double digits, like 10, 11 points. But that's the thing. These tournaments, these conference tournaments, are very tricky. You just don't know what's going to happen. So that's where it stands. I'm hoping Wagner will obviously be able to get there, and it would take on a Brooklyn school. in one of the other matchups. So well, I'm hoping it'll be LIU. That's what I'm hoping for, at least. There you go. And you got the MAC tournament coming up as well. So there's also, I think this is the best part of the college baskets for me, because seeing these schools play, these games mean everything to these schools. So, I mean, that's something that, you know, you shouldn't take lightly. I mean, because kids, it means everything for them to win these tournaments and get into that big dance. Whereas the bigger conferences, unless it's a team that goes on a run, we've seen teams go on runs and get in when they weren't supposed to. But for the big teams, meaning the Dukes, you know they're in there already. Virginia had a great year. They're having a great year, and they might actually be a really tough team to beat. So I mean, for the Dukes, Carolinas, you know where they're going to be. Kentucky, even though Kentucky hasn't had a classic year, they're going to be in the tournament. They're in the tournament. So Kansas and so forth. And that's the whole point. It's really more about those small conferences. They're probably not getting more than that one bid, especially if it's a small conference. You're not getting more than one. So so it doesn't matter how good you are in the regular season, you still got to win your tournament. So yeah, that even includes the Ivy League now, Princeton. So they still have to win their tournament now. So it's different. It's a different times right now. Actually, Princeton's sixth in the Ivy League. So yeah, who's actually tops this year? Usually Princeton's pretty good. They actually have had a down year. Penn's having a great year. They've only lost once. So you got University of Penn. They're 11-1 and 21-7 overall. Harvard, believe it or not, is 10-2. 15-12 overall, but 10-2 of the conference. Yale, 7-5. Columbia. So that, and Princeton's 4-8. So they're towards the bottom. They got the MAA, the Metro Athletic Atlantic, with Rider and Canisius and Niagara and Iona. Rider actually had the best record. Rider hasn't had a real good team probably since I was still in college. Yeah, I almost went to Rider. Manhattan was a 500 team. Iona has 11 wins. Canisius and Niagara had pretty good years. Mount St. Peter's toward the bottom. Buffalo Bulls were once again tops in the MAC East, and Toledo is the top of the MAC West. So you look at some of these small conferences, and it really comes down to performing, and comes down to delivering in these tournaments. So that's what it's really going to come down to, and we'll see what happens with that. So that's where it stands with the college baskets. A lot to get excited about, though, obviously, when it comes to college basketball. And, of course, there's also stuff that's not so exciting, you know, when you hear about whether or not it's true or not, the Sean Miller story, you know, that the FBI supposedly had him on a wire saying that he would pay his star freshman center $100,000 to get him to go to school. It wouldn't surprise me if it's true. I mean, this stuff's been going on for a long time. And is it any wonder? I mean, these kids do not get much in return. Yeah, they get scholarships. But what else are they getting? They hardly get any money for food. They're being taken advantage of. The NCAA are the biggest hypocrites around. So when it comes down to it, I mean, everybody's making money. The schools are making money off them. ESPN's making money. Fox is making money. And now CBS is making money. Everybody's making money. And the games and the revenue, everything. And teams that they sell jerseys, college, university selling jerseys, selling merchandise. These kids aren't really getting a lot. They're not getting much tax, really. I'm not saying that it's good to hit. It's, when you hear $100,000, it's a pretty big sum. It's a large sum right there. I'm saying that's good. It's not good. I mean, but cheating's been going on for a whole long time. Now, should athletes get paid? I think they should be compensated. How much should they be compensated? That's more of the question. You know, how much? I don't know. But, I mean, they definitely are generating a lot of money, a lot of revenue for the NCAA, for the networks, et cetera, for the schools, when it comes to both big-time college football and big-time college. And when it comes down to it, how many of these guys are really going to be able to play at the next level? Especially when it comes to the NBA, it's a lot less than football. Football has a lot more rounds. So, it takes so much to make it as well. And these kids got to be careful, of course, with agents too around because they're trying to take advantage of them. Lenny Cook story obviously comes to mind. There's plenty of stories like that. I saw Lenny Cook play. He was the real deal at LaSalle, and but he made mistakes, and we've seen the Lenny Cook story. I've watched every time it comes on, I watch it. I've watched Hoop Dreams. That was a great story too about two kids from inner city of Chicago trying to make it. I mean, it's with Arthur Agee and I can't think of the other kid's name, but that was a great documentary from the early 90s. So there it's a two-way street. You can't be what's the word? You can't ignore it. You can't be shocked when these things come out. So I mean, when it comes down to it, these things are going to come out, and they come out because these kids, you know, they want some kind of, they definitely want to have some more. They want to have something come back because it's not easy. They want to take care of their families. That's why when I watched the documentary on Coach Cal with the one and done, I understand the rationale behind it. It may not be what you want to see because I'm a purist. I want to see, I don't think there should be a one and done. I think if these kids go to school, they should be in school till at least their junior year. That's what I believe in. Till at least that junior year. You know, maybe I think I think they got to play at least 2 years. Maybe play 3 years. But you have the Europe option. And the Europe option also has their own academy. You might see more kids opt for the Europe option. That wouldn't be surprising. You know, there have been some success stories, certainly, from Europe. So it really, I think it depends on, definitely need to redo things. They need to really take a hard look. Yeah, it used to be kids could just go from high school to the NBA. But not every kid that just goes from high school to the NBA makes it. Not everybody's Kevin Garnett. Not everybody is LeBron. Not everybody's Dwight or McGrady. I mean, there are so many guys that don't make it, that don't make it big, that just go straight directly. That's why they changed it. But the one and done, I understand why Calipari tells them, if he thinks they're ready, go. Because if they're going to be a lottery pick, they're going to be a lottery pick, and they're going to get a lot of money. They're going to be able to take care of themselves, secure financially, and take care of their families. The case of DeJuan Wagner, that was a real interesting case. He told Wagner after he had that great year, great freshman year of Memphis, he said, "You're not coming back." Ripped up the scholarship and said, "Go." And what wound up happening? Wagner was doing well in his first year for Cleveland, and then what happened? He had a health problem, and his basketball career was done at 21. But he made a ton of money, and he did well financially, so it worked out for him. So, do you think that a guy like Calipari has the best interest of his players, which is why he goes to those drafts, which is he and which is why he support why he has such good really strong relationships with his players, including Marcus Camby, who wanted to come back for a senior year. And Marcus Camby was an unbelievable player for UMass, put them on the map, Coach Cal, and with them being number one, going to a Final Four. And what Calipari said? Go. You've done everything. You've accomplished everything. Go. And he got picked pretty high by Toronto and had a terrific career, tremendous career. Knicks fans, as a Knicks fan, I got pretty fond memories of the Camby man. Oh, yeah. 1999. I got a lot of fond memories of Camby. I mean, so, but the one thing I would say is that when it comes down to, the business side of athletics is, they got to be careful. They have to be careful of how they handle certain things. That way, they're not that injuries. There's all sorts of risks. there's all sorts of risks. That's what it really comes down to. I didn't think I would actually discuss all this on this podcast, but I decided to, so I put it out there. That's going to do it for the basketball portion. I do want to get to some more topics, obviously. I wanted to talk a little bit about spring training, and this will just be about a 5-6 minute segment because it's spring training, for crying out loud. All right, so it is heating up, but remember we just hit March. All right, so far so good. Miguel Andujar has been terrific so far for the Yankees. The rookie third baseman, obviously, he's making a strong push for the job. The Yankees did make the 3-team trade to acquire Brandon Drury in that 3-team trade with Arizona and Tampa. I don't know what Tampa's doing, but they're terrible, a train wreck. But don't forget that Brandon Drury, he doesn't have to play third. He could play third. He could play second. He's a utility guy. You know, I was talking to the big man about it, Brian St. Horn about it, and he is a guy you can plug. But if Andrew Hart's having a great camp, he has this kind of camp. But you got to get him the bats. I mean, you put him on the roster, you got to get him the at bats. And maybe they could split it up. So, but so far so good for Drury. Gary Sanchez crushed one over the scoreboard. Stanton has done well. Judge just came back, so there's that as well. Drury has also played second base, so keep that in mind. All right, and everybody was talking about Gleyber Torres and a couple of other candidates, but Drury could play second. He could also slide over to second, and Drury is a good bat in mind. They don't have to, unless Gleyber Torres forces his way on the roster, they can start him in Triple A. They don't have to. Now, I mean, I'd like to see Clint Frazier. I'd like to see a little more of him, but he's got the concussion, so there's no need to rush him, and he's probably going to start in AAA. You got to let him recover, obviously, and get ready. So, especially with how the outfield stacked, when you got Ellsbury, you got Hicks, their outfield stacked. You got Judge, you got Stanton. One of them will DH, and sometimes they'll both be out on the outfield. You got Gardner, Hicks, you got Ellsbury, fifth outfielder. Frazier is probably going to go AAA anyway. And Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, Scranton. So, and Drury is a young guy, too. So that's another thing to keep in mind. That's why I think this was a good deal. I think this is the kind of team-oriented player that you want. You know, certainly a guy who could play. He could play middle infield. He could play hot corner. He could play a little outfield for you. He doesn't have to on this team, obviously. So, he's 25 years old. There's nothing wrong with that. I thought it was a good move. Now, in terms of the pitching, obviously it's going to be based around Tanaka and Severino. Severino probably the ace. Well, Tanaka's really the ace still. Severino probably be the two. And then afterwards, you've got Sonny Gray, who has to pitch better than he did last year after he came over. I'm sure he will. You got CeCe. And you got a real good rotation there. You got Montgomery as well. So there's a lot to like, certainly. And Chance Adams can start, probably start in the minors again. You know, there's no rush. The Mets, they already have injuries. DeGrom is not going to be ready for the start of the season with a back injury. So he's not going to be ready. That's a blow. Syndergaard was hitting triple digits in his first showing. Harvey pitched okay in his first outing. But you don't know what the story will be with if Harvey's going to be good, if Harvey's going to come back from everything, and you don't know how Mets will be. But the Mets do have some injuries already, so that's something to watch. Cespedes did do some DH duty yesterday. Todd Frazier is still a good addition. Offensively, I think they should be okay. Pitching-wise, you know, they made some good additions. Questions? If you are a Mets fan, they put it out there. Would they have interest in Jake Arrieta if you could sign him for a year? And this was on the afternoon drive. I was listening to Carlin, Maggie Gray, and Bart Scott. Certainly, Arrieta is a guy who was looking for a monster contract. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. There's no market for it. And it's really a strange time for baseball, because you would think a guy like Jake Arrieta would have signed, but people are afraid. They don't want to give out these contracts anymore. And I definitely understand why their teams are trying to be more careful. They're trying to steer away from giving out these long-term deals. Now, Arrieta is, he's turning 32 in about a week, March 6th, so 5 days from now. He will be 30. He will be 32. He certainly made do after coming over to the Cubs, winning the Cy Young, having that dominant run for about a year and a half, and then he started to tail off. And started to tail off in the second half of 2016. Last year, he pitched to a 3.5 ERA, gave up 24 bombs, but he still can strike out batters, 23 bombs, actually. But the innings were down, so there are questions. So I could see what teams are starting to say, well, is he capable of doing what he did? What he did in 2015, the 22 wins, the sub-2 ERA, dominating, no. He's never going to be that. But can he get back to being a guy who gives you about 200 innings and strikes out about 185 to 200 batters? I don't see why not. But I also see why teams are shying away from him and why he's not going to get that long-term deal that he thought he would get. He made, just to rack it up, he made over $15 million, 15.6 to be exact, 15.64 last year at the Cubs. So he's probably looking for about $20 million. Maybe a team could sneak in and sign him for a short-term deal, 1 year, 21 or 22. And he could bet on himself and prove that he's worth it. He might have to do that. You have other free agents. You have Melky Cabrera, the milkman, a proven commodity in the outfield, a guy who has a plus arm. He's not going to bash the ball and hit 20 home runs, but he's a professional hitter. He's a guy who hits about 285, 290, can give you double digits in home runs. He'll hit probably between 10 and 15 home runs, 16 home runs, knocking 80 to 85 runs if he's on. And he'll get double digits in assists. He's that kind of player. So, I think he's proven he's overcome the whole thing where he got caught with the performance enhancers, and he's proven to be a good professional hitter, and he's working out every day. He's working out with a high school team, and he's working out and taking BP, and he's hoping that he could still play. He's hoping he's not done. He's 33 years old, a good corner outfielder and a professional hitter. Will somebody sign him? I think somebody eventually will, but teams are loading up their rosters. Moustakas is the most interesting case. I really think what it comes down to is nobody wants to give him the money. They're looking at him and saying he never hit 38 home runs before. His previous high was 22. The ball was flying out last year. He hit 38 home runs at 85 RBIs. And he did hit 22 home runs in 2015 with 82 knocked in. He's 28 years old, going on 29. He'll be 30 at the end of the year, September 11th, 1988. When he was born, same year as Kershaw. He's a guy, if you sign him, he should be able to give you that 25 to 30 home runs and give you the 85 to 90 knocked in. I think that's what he can do. And it's about 265, 270. But I understand why teams are steering clear. They don't want to pay these guys. They really don't want to pay. He only made $8.7 million. So you have to think he's looking for a much bigger contract. And the question is, how long is it going to take? What about a Carlos Gonzalez? Is he done? He bet on himself last year. He turned down a big deal in the Rockies, and then he had a miserable year last year. Is he done? Or does somebody eventually take a chance? These are all really good questions, and it's a really interesting time for baseball, and I mean, as far as how this goes down, it's going to be very interesting to follow. You know, so it's a story. It's definitely a story that we'll keep following. How does it impact the guys, the big free agents next year, like Bryce Harper and Manny Machado? I don't think it does, because those guys are legit superstars, guys that you know you can build around. They are going to get paid. Will absolutely get paid. So just keep that in mind. They're going to get paid. They're going to make their money. Now, on to some other stuff right now as we move from the NCAA to the spring training, now to some NHL stuff. And obviously, the trade deadline came and went. The New York Rangers did exactly what they said they were going to do. They made some big trades, not just trading some expiring contracts, trading Nick Holden, getting the third-round pick with Rob O'Gara, a defenseman that looks like he might be a 6 or a 7 at this point. But getting the third-round pick for Holden, good move. Holden didn't play the first 3 games for the Bruins, but last night did play and picked up an assist in an 8-4 blowout win over the Pens in a very odd game that even featured a fight between 2 big men, between Chara and Oleksiak. Chara going, you know, 7 feet and Oleksiak 6'7". But Rick Nash has looked very good with the Bruins. Last night, picked up his 2nd goal with the Bruins in 3 games. He had a goal and assist. So far he's got 3 points in the 3 games, and he's looking good. He's looking good so far with his new team. He's fitting in. And it's not a surprise, you know, surrounded with better talent that he would fit in. So that's definitely good to see. Rick Nash deserves that opportunity to take another shot at it. And I wish him nothing but the best. He's a classy guy. He's certainly still dominant down low. I watched a good chunk of this game. Boy, sure is fun to watch. But I wish him all the best of luck in the world. I think Gordon did very well in that deal because that deal, you know, not only did they get a first-round pick, did they get a defensive prospect back. I think it was Trent Frederick. But they also were able to get a good player in Ryan Spooner. He is 26. He can be signed for 1 more year as a restricted before hitting the market. But Ryan Spooner, Spoon Man, has been unbelievable so far. His first 2 games, 2 assists in his debut on Rattel night. Congratulations to Jean Rattel with his jersey going up last Sunday, number 19. The greatest Rangers center to ever play for the team, probably. Although everybody would say Messi, but Rattel put up 109 points. He centered the best line that they ever had, the gag line, the goal of game line, with Vic Hatfield, who was the brawn, kind of like Adam Graves, and who scored the 50 goals the 1 year, where he had over 100 points at that 1 big year, at the penalty minutes, when fought. And, of course, Rod Gilbert, one of the great players for New York Rangers history. But the ceremony was terrific. I'm glad that my dad was there. That was his team. That was his guy, Rattel. When they traded him in Park, my dad was devastated. When Emil Francis made the trade to the Bruins, and they made the deal for Carol Vadnai and for, obviously, Phil Esposito. But they made the deal. They did get to a final, though, on 79. On the back of John Davidson, a deal that Francis made for him from St. Louis. But those Bruins teams with Rattel and Park, they went to 2 Stanley Cup finals themselves and lost to Montreal, that Montreal dynasty as well. So I did a lot of research. There's a bunch of guys that the Rangers could honor. Guys, I'm talking about maybe having a night where they could actually recognize the original Ranger, Bill Cook, Brian Cook as well, as Frank Boucher, the bread line, because that was when they first came in at 26-27. I think they should have a night to recognize those guys. What about recognizing 1940 and Frank Boucher coached that team? He had a hand in their first 3 cups, and Brian Hextall. And you could also talk about Muzz Patrick as well. There are other legends that don't get recognized by the Rangers, and they don't have to retire the numbers, but you could have a night. Why not have a night to look back on your history? It's nice to see them doing history. I'm glad Rattel is going to get honored next year. I'm very excited for him and thrilled for him. I thought it was cool watching his reaction. He was taken back by it. And Messier congratulated him, the other number 11. Of course, Messier remembered for Stanley Cup, very fondly remembered for the guarantee and everything he did in the 90s. And one thing about sports, you know, these runs, you know, they come and go. This has been a really great era of Rangers hockey since Lundqvist came to the team in 2005, 2006. You give Sather a lot of credit. Sather, by the way, played on those 70s teams with Emil Francis. So he played on the 72 team when they lost to Boston, when Rattel was a shadow of himself from the injury, came back for the cup final, and won it with assist when they probably could have beat Boston with Forsberg in the cup and some great players on that team, including Johnny Busick and some other great legends, of course, Esposito. So it makes you wonder. It certainly does make you wonder. What if he had been healthy? Would they have won? We'll never know. But I'm very happy that they honored the legends. In terms of what they're doing, I understand it. I understand it perfectly what they're doing. They had to do it. They had to rebuild this thing and build it back up. It's tough. It's really tough. But when you see Ryan McDonagh go, look, he was rumored for so long. And McDonagh, I think McDonagh was torn apart by it. And that's why he was kind of away from the team for a while, took down his Twitter account, and I think it bothered him. He's a very emotional guy. We saw it, you know, after that Islander embarrassment. He said that it was the most embarrassed he ever was as a Ranger, and he thought it was his worst game they ever played. And this guy took things to heart. I remember watching that interview. It reminded me of Derek Stepan after they got eliminated by the Senators in the playoffs, and he talked about how he was so disappointed in himself for how he performed, how he didn't perform. And I think he knew the writing was on the wall that he was going to get moved. And that's the problem. That's the tough part with the salary cap, is that, you know, that these teams, when you give them those no movement clauses, when you sign these guys, you have to create room. And sometimes you lose guys. The Rangers did not win a cup. They came close against the Kings, but it didn't happen. Winnable series, certainly. A couple of things break their way. 2014 feels like so long ago. It really isn't, but it does. Amazing. It's going to be 4 years. I'll never forget Game 6 against the Canadiens. I'll never forget that as long as I live, being there for that. The pandemonium, the celebration. Being there for the Stanley Cup Finals, for one of those games against the Kings, I'll never forget. I just wish that they could have won. I wish they could have won with the core, with Brett Donna, with Dan Girardi, with Mark Stahl, with Derek Stepan, with Derek Brassard, with Zouk. With all of them. Actually, Zouk was not on. That's right. Zouk wasn't. Was it 15 when he got hurt? I'm trying to remember now. I think it was without Zouk. It was St. Louis. That's right. Zouk went down. That was when Zouk got hit in the helmet. But God, that with Boyle, with Dominic Moore, you could rattle them all off. Lundqvist, obviously. There were these guys meant so much, and now, well, you got is four guys left from that 14 team. That's unbelievable. You got Stahl, who I think should stay because he's a good leader and he's had a good year, and I think he'd be a good veteran person to keep around and wear the A. You've got, obviously, King Henrik. He's got three more years left in that contract. He loves being here, and he said he can't picture himself playing for anybody else. He's got a lot of pride. He loves being a Ranger. And he's got a couple of other guys left. You got Zuccarello. And right now, I can't even think right now. It's hard for me to even think with this podcast. But as we wrap up the live portion, we'll go overtime and listen to the podcast when you can. I'm giving you a lot, obviously, here. You know, certainly. So this is Derek Felix. We're going to go into overtime and listen to the rest of this podcast. This is Derek Felix with the podcast on the RS Network. Certainly covered a lot. I'm doing Rangers right now. I'm obviously the four skaters. The four players I'm thinking of are Lundqvist, Mark Stahl, Mats Zuccarello, and who the heck is the fourth guy? Who is the fourth guy? I'm just drawing a blank right now. That's how many guys are gone. It's really unbelievable when you think that they lost so many players from these teams. But obviously, Elaine Vigneault is still the coach. But it looks like, you know, he's probably going to be gone after this year. When you think of it, though, it's just – it's amazing. It really is amazing when you it's amazing. Jesper Fast. Jesper Fast is another guy. Yeah, that was – I think Jesper Fast is the other guy. I don't think there's anybody else. Is there anybody else that I've left out? Yeah. Yes. No, Jesper wasn't part of the 14 team. That's right. Kreider. How could I forget Kreider? What am I, like an idiot? Jesper was on the 15 team. Was Jesper part of that 14 team? When did he come up? He played in 11 games. Did he play? I don't think he played. Did he play in the postseason for them? I don't think he did. If I had to bet, I would probably say no. I think his first team was the 51. Obviously, I remember Jesper for that play that he made to force that turnover against the Caps in Game 5 of the overtime game, where he forced the turnover, which kept the play alive and led to Stepan, who passed up on the shot. And Ryan McDonough said in his letter he couldn't believe that Stepan had the game on his stick, and then he got a no-look pass. He got a pass instead from Stepan, and McDonough just let everything go on that shot, and he wound up winning the game, and I was there for that. Jesper was mostly in Hartford. He did – actually, you know what? He did play three games during that playoff run. So, you know what? It's five Rangers. So I just want to correct myself, and I'll make sure I put that on my blog and update that. I'll put that on my next post, that he was part of that team. So he was also, of course, part of the 15 team that came a period shy of another Stanley Cup appearance, and what could have been a winnable series against the Blackhawks, and what would have been an exciting series to see. Losing the way they lost to the Lightning was pretty tough. And that was really the end of the run. But the way they came back against the Caps, when it comes to Ryan McDonough, I'm going to miss him. It's weird seeing all these guys and the Lightning dark blue jerseys. It's really weird. It's a really weird vibe that I'm getting. But, you know, it's part of sports. But I can remember when they first got McDonald's, and people said, you know, this could turn out to be a great trade. When they dumped Scott Gomez, say there's best ever move. How much you want to bet that maybe him and Gainey had too many to drink, too many scotches when they made this deal? You know, Scott Coleman's been out of the league for a while. The full trade took place. It took place back on June 30th, 2009. So the night of traded for Montreal Canadiens with Doug Janik. Wow, I forgot about him. Chris Higgins, I remember him. And Pavel Valentenko. Valentenko went back to the K. He looked like he was capable of playing in the NHL, but went back to the K. Higgins didn't last too long because let's just put it this way, he lived it up a little too much in New York, being from New York. And the deal was, it was really Higgins and McDonough for Gomez. Michael Bustle, I never heard of. Tom Pyatt. Tom Pyatt was a good fourth-line guy. Energy guy that plays for Ottawa. But it was such a great trade for the Rangers. McDonough obviously played another year at Wisconsin, played 3 years in Wisconsin, spent half the year, his first pro year at the AHL, the Hartford Wolfpack, or Connecticut Whale, and then came to the Rangers. And he made a difference. And by his second year, he was on the top pair with Girardi. And they won. They wound up winning the East with the most points and had the top seed. He had 32 points in his first full season under Tortorella. So when people say Tortorella couldn't develop young players, that's a bunch of baloney. it was heartbreaking the way they lost to the Devils in the conference final. That was a series where it was right there for them. Game five, they came back from 3-0 down, 3-0 down. I remember, you know, sitting next to my father and my brother telling them they're going to come back. I just knew they were going to come back and tie it, and they did. They did. Prust scored a shorthanded goal, and they came back and tied the game. And they gave up the winning goal to, I think it was, whoever centered that fourth line for the Devils, Ryan Carter, he got the winner. They didn't pick him up. Tough. And that's how they lost. Once they lost that game, they were cooked. We came back, and then they came back from 2-0 down in game six. Similar to how they came back from 2-0 down in 94, but they weren't able to duplicate it. They needed to win the game regular, so it went to overtime. And I did not have a good feeling, and Henrik, it's over, became a reality with Doc Emmerich in about the first minute. And with McDonough and all the other Rangers basically on their knees, and Henry put it in. And that was the Devils' revenge. So they would go to that Stanley Cup final. They would lose to the Kings in six games. And then it was the Rangers' turn in 2014 where they made the miraculous run. That run under AV in his first year, where McDonough scored the 14 goals, had the 43 points, and was one of the contenders for the Norris, where he put up the career highs and took over the Canadian series. What he put up, I think he had 12 points against the Canadians, against his former team that drafted him. He had 12 points in the series. I think it was 2 goals and 10 assists. He destroyed them, or 2-9-11 out of his 4 goals and 17 points. 11 out of 17 came in that series where they won in six games. That was unbelievable. That put him on the map. How about the comeback? How about what they did against the Pens? I mean, they had never beat the Pens before. St. Louis lost his mom, France, and it was an emotional time. And I just remember after game four, walking out of that garden so frustrated because I felt like they could take the Pens. I felt like they could compete, and they could actually beat them. That, not that they could beat them. I felt that they were selling themselves short. I was so disappointed after they lost games 3 and 4 to go down 3-1 in that series. Like, not again. We're going to lose to this team again. And it was just really, I just came away really frustrated. And the thing about it is that I just felt like they were beating themselves. And that was the year that you had Broussard with Pouliot and Zuccarello on the third line. And that checking line was, that third line was just unbelievable against the Pens in the comeback. St. Louis loses his mom. They win. They go to Pittsburgh. They take care of the Pens game five. I'll never forget that. I felt like they would win game five for some reason. St. Louis then, and they loses his mom. They had the team meeting after game four, where St. Louis talked and Brad Richards talked, and they talked about, you know, they're not done. Lundqvist spoke up to, you know, it's not over, and they had that team meeting, and I think that was huge. And the motivation was St. Louis losing his mom. Emotional leader. He became a emotional leader, the captain for captain trade. You know, Savory gave up one too many picks with Callahan, who still plays, even though he's not the same player. But, you know, they showed so much heart. And that Mother's Day game is one of my favorite memories. That's one of my all-time favorites. There's a lot of them. There's the Roosevelt goal and double overtime, which was when I was a lot younger. It's over a decade ago already. There's a lot of moments. There's the Mark Stahl goal where he won a game in overtime. There's that. There's so many of them. There's so many moments that, you know, you go back to and you're just like, wow, that really happened. It did. And wow, I mean, these teams had so many good moments. The Kreider, going from winning an NCAA title to stunningly performing so well, the Rangers, without playing a single regular season game in 11-12 during that run. And Tortorella being impressed, he took a step back and went down to the minors, and Tortorella got all the blame. And even AV had to send him back before Kreider was ready. And they came back, and what do you know? He got his first hat trick against Tortorella on the Canucks. And a terrific performance. He rolls up to the occasion. But I'll tell you what. I mean, when I think about that Mother's Day game in St. Louis, it was so fitting that St. Louis would get a piece of that puck and score that first goal. The crowd, we were so loud. The eruption when St. Louis scored. First off, everybody knew he scored. And when they announced it, the crowd went even crazier. When he scored that goal, I just knew they were going to win that game. Even though it got a little hairy towards the end, they won. I knew they were going to win. And when I went to the seventh game, I felt confident about it. Felt like there's something going on here. Some kind of magic going on. Whether it's the whole thing with St. Louis, there was something going on with this team. And you have, obviously, St. Louis setting up Richards for the power play goal. That turned out to be the series winner, the series clincher. But I have to go back to Ryan Boyle. The Boyle goal. The goal that Boyle scored. The effort that he put in to score that goal to give them that lead. That gave me so much confidence. And they came back to tie it. And then they scored the power play goal with, I think there was maybe under 2 minutes left in the second period. And wow. And Lundqvist was unbelievable in that final period. It felt like the Pens spent the whole period attacking, especially that last 10 minutes. I mean, it was so nerve-wracking watching it. I never thought they would beat the Pens, beat Crosby, beat Malkin, beat those guys. And when it was over, I was so excited. I was so pumped up. It was just incredible for them to win in the fashion that they won. They slayed the beast. That's how I looked at it. I mean, they really did. They slayed the beast. They came back for the first time in franchise history from 3-1 down. And you could say what you want about AV as coach, but they had the players. And the coach, he was the coach. You don't have to like AV. I mean, I've criticized him plenty of times. But he's had a good run here. So let's not take away from that. You want to say, has it always been the best handling some of the players, JT Miller, withstanding? Go ahead. It's true. It's all true. Run was amazing. What they have beaten the Canadians with Price, if he didn't get hurt from the Kreider collision, accidentally on purpose, which really wasn't, because we certainly know that he was tripped from behind. Let's just put it that way, by a dirty defenseman, who I'm not going to bother naming right now, but plays for Nashville right now. that's my reference, and he's still a dirty player, still the same dirty player. So that's how you know my feeling on it. I don't have to name the guy because you know how I feel about him. But they would get to the Cup final. Obviously, it just didn't fall their way. Dwight King, I don't know why it wasn't goaltender interference. Obviously, if it was 2-3 years later, they could have challenged it. That series would have gone 7 games, and as great as Jonathan Quick was, I would have bet on the Rangers to win if it went 7. I think they would have found a way to win. I really do. I really believe that. The Kings were the champs though before, so they would have had that experience edge, and I think that experience edge helped them win those games in overtime. But did they sit a little too on their heels? Yes, they did. That's why AV gets critiqued to this day. They should have done more. did we do enough? As John McEnroe sometimes says, when he talks about Jimmy Connors in the ESPN classic documentary about Jimmy Connors and the, and what that one more run, one more time, 91 run. The Rangers should have done more. I think that applies to almost anything in life. Did I give it my all? Should I have not taken off that second year of track because of my feet? I should have ran. I should have gave more. Should I have been around the team more as I was hurt and gone to meets? Absolutely. I should have been there. I was in a weird place back then, knowing that I couldn't run anymore. It was tough for me with my plantar fasciitis, but or making the tennis team and deciding not to play because my grades weren't great. I should have played. That was my best sport. I never played. Yet I was really good at tennis. I'll never know. You can't go back, though. You can't go back. 2015, we can replay it over and over, but they came back and they did it. They did it against the Caps. And they beat the Preds twice in overtime. Carl Hagelin, another amazing player that was part of that, really. Right at that time. And now he's a two-time champion with the Pens, playing with Malkin. It's hard to believe. It really is hard to believe the way things work out. Every big run comes to an end. And, after they got beat the way they got beat by the Pens, they got embarrassed and Broussard got traded and Zibanejad came back. And the second round pick turned into Brendan Smith, who was good last year during last year's run. And then they re-signed him and he was terrible and he's in Hartford now. We don't know if he'll be back. We don't know if he's part of the future or what's going to happen with him. But I guess the one thing you could say is when they had their chance, and that they had a big chance against the Ottawa Senators in those games, every one of them, every game in Ottawa, they had a chance. They had the leads in every one of them, and they blew them each game in just epic fashion. And it's really hard to believe the way they lost that series. They lost a series that they should have won. And I knew that was their last chance. I knew it was the last dash in it. It was a real winnable series. And we have to see J.G. Pajal scoring four goals, killing them, scoring four, basically emulating John Drews, scoring what he scored, six in the series. How many goals does he have total this year? Like eight? Wow. But that's sports sometimes. I mean, it really is. And I can't promise anything when it comes to how quick things are going to turn around with this team. I just know that Jeff Gordon did the right thing. Even if I felt he should have gotten a better prospect when he included JT Miller and what TSN terms is a massive deal with Ikdonna to Tampa Bay, even though I feel it should have been like a Taylor Radish or it should have been Foote, it wasn't. They like these other two kids. They like Hajek, the defenseman, and they like Howden. They like those two guys. Is it going to work out? I can't say. But they both sound good. They both had real good World Juniors tournaments. Did Libor Hajek, and I think it's Brett Howden. I hope so. I hope it does. I hope it works out. And they got the first-round pick. They have three first-round picks. So they want to do is they want to maximize the value. Yes, the other two first-round picks are new, but their first-round pick's going to be in the top 10. There's going to be a lottery.
stabbed.
You know, they're not going to have a great chance at it. They'll have about a 6.1, 6.2% chance, but what they have to do is try to parlay that pick into a top five and get an impact player. Now, I know it's not going to be Rasmus Dahlin unless they somehow win the lottery. Miraculously, they win the lottery, then they can draft Rasmus Dahlin, who would be unbelievable for any franchise. Ask the Sabres how they'd feel about him or anybody who gets him. But Chuck's the guy I'm looking at. I mean, I've been looking at him for a while. I think he'd fill a lot of stuff that the Rangers need internally with the size, with the power, forward presence, to team him up with Kreider. And he's got that ability. He is tough to move. He played very well for USA with the 9 points. That's the guy I'm looking at. Uses the other defenseman, Quinn Hughes, but he's small. But he's great. He's obviously big, really good offensive. I don't know how a 5'9 American defenseman projects, but he's going to go very high in this draft. But I will continue to look at Brady Tkachuk and think he'll go on the top five, and if the Rangers can get to five to get him, that's the guy that I want. There are other guys, and I'm going to start looking at some of the other guys. So that's where I'm going to leave it. Now, in terms of the rest of the deadline, boy, oh boy, I mean, the Lightning, obviously, they got a lot better. And Al McDonough is going to be back with Girardi on the second pair. And they still have Sergachev on their third pair with Colbert. And they got Hedman and Strahlman. Rangers South with Strahlman, with Callahan, with McDonough, with JT and Girardi. I mean, five guys. Five guys. They were all part of it. Strahlman was part of that, big part of that 14 team. It's amazing. It really is amazing. Think about it. You think about how many guys we had, how many guys are left. It's crazy. It really is crazy. But it is what it is. The Islanders didn't do anything. They didn't do anything to help themselves. And I know the teams in front of them aren't that good. Columbus had a 2-0 lead, gave up the last five to LA and lost. But the Islanders did not do anything to help themselves. Getting Brandon Davidson does not do anything for them. And unless Tavares picks it up, they're not going to make it. He has not played well. Barzal's been their best player. He leads them in points. Anders Lee has cooled off. And the Islanders' defense is still a nightmare. And their goaltending is still relied on too heavily. And neither Halak, well, Halak's better, and he's more capable of stealing games. And the other guy can do it. I mean, so they're still a nightmare defensively, especially without Calvin DeHaan. So factor all that in. I don't know what the Islanders are thinking. They're obviously not. The Canes won. They got a big win at the Flyers. So they broke their hex. So they're right there. I'm still looking at the Panthers. I really like the way they're playing. They continue to win games. They pulled out a tough one against the Devils, hauled them off 3-2. Barkov is on fire. Two more goals for him. He got like 18 points in his last 13 or 19, something like that, or 19. He's a terrific player. Trocheck has a new career high in points and goals again. He's playing great. Huberdeau's playing very well. Dadonov's playing well. They're scoring goals. They're getting contributions throughout the lineup. They have very good skaters. Yandel and is playing well. They got some good players. They got some good skaters, obviously. They got Ekblad. They also have Mike Matheson. And Luongo is healthy, and Luongo's playing well. Luongo goes down, all bets are off. They have the games in hand. They have a lot of home games. So far, it's going well for them. They still trail, I think, by 5 points. So with that said, they've got to make the most of it. Columbus lost, so that helps. But the Panthers are coming. They're up to 66 points, 21 games left. after 28 Raw. They're coming. They're making the push. They are pushing hard. Actually, they're only 3 points behind Columbus. Carolina's ahead of them still because Carolina won. Carolina's 6-7 points, but they only have 18 left and they only have 25 Raw. New York Islanders are at 65 points in 64 games. They're 4 behind, but there's 18 left and they have 26 Raw. The Panthers have 3 games at hand and they're playing extremely well. They got the Sabres coming up. Sabres have been playing pretty well. They've been playing some spoiler. They beat the Lightning every night. So Buffalo is traveling to Florida. They're playing tonight. The Islanders just lost to Montreal. And Montreal, this game tonight, later tonight, against Canadians in the Barclays Center, is a must-win for the New York Islanders. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You got another playoff impact game. You got the Devils in the first wild card. After a tough loss, proportionate return, they have 74 points. They're 2 behind the Pens for third place, Columbus for the second wild card, and 7 clear of the Canes, and 8 of Florida. They made some good upgrades for picking up Michael Grabner from the New York Rangers in the first ever trade between the two franchises. Good trade, too. The Rangers got a second round pick out of it, and they got Rika from KHL to place for SKA, also a Shesterkin. So, and he's got one more year left on his contract, his Rykov. So, good deal. I like the fact that, you know, hey, you got to try to get the best deal, you do it. But the Devils are in Carolina. So, Carolina trying to get back to back wins. So, there's some playoff implications right there. So, you got some pretty big games on Friday night to watch in the Eastern race. Western race. Winnipeg has been playing great hockey. They're playing in Detroit, Colorado, Minnesota. That's a pretty big tilt right there in Colorado. The Rangers in Calgary. Calgary is playing for something. The Rangers are playing for pride. They just got a win against the Canucks in a crazy game. Nashville, Vancouver. Vancouver's bad. Nashville, is the best team in the West. And you got the Vegas Knights hosting Ottawa. Ottawa is not good, obviously. And Carlson's probably going to be leaving this summer, which is really sad. But there's this other Carlson, William Carlson, ex-Blue Jackal with 34 goals. Vegas looking to rebound from some tough loss to the Kings. And then you got the Ducks. They're still competing for something, and they're hosting the Blue Jackets, which just came off a bad loss. So, and those teams are fighting to try to get in the playoffs. So there's a lot of playoff implications with the Friday night matchups. Of course, the Rangers – obviously, I'll obviously keep a close eye on that, but I'm also going to try to keep a close eye on the Devils and the Canes and on the Islanders as well, the Canadians and Buffalo Sabres a little bit. I want to watch the Sabres and Panthers a little bit. So there's a lot of good matchups. And finally, just to finish off this podcast, long podcast, obviously, we did a lot of stuff. I did want to touch on one more thing, and this will just be brief. Odell Beckham apparently wanting to make $20 million, become the highest paid receiver. Odell Beckham is a great talent. He's a great talent, obviously. He's a top five receiver. He's not the best guy in the league. The best guy is on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I would also say that the Falcons have the second best guy. Well, Odell Beckham is coming off a serious injury. And Antonio Brown is better than him. Definitely is better than him. He makes, I think, 17. Is $20 million a big number? It is. It's a big number. I have two schools of thought on this. If you don't give it to him, then you better trade him and you better get a good return back. But the other school of thought is if you do give it to him, then he better back it up. He's an electrifying receiver. And he's still the number one target. You take him off the Giants and I mean, they have some good talent. They don't have that other great guy. So it's like, that's that's what it comes down to. By the way, Antonio Brown will be 30. He's turning 30. So he's earned. He's earned his contract. Odell Beckham, how many years has he been in the league? Three? Has he been in the league 3 years or for 4 years already? I mean, he's only a couple years younger than him. Odell. Actually, yeah, Odell is, he'll be 27. He'll be 26. Actually, he's younger. He's 26. He'll be 26. I think this guy is all about himself. He's 25 right now. He needs to mature. But he's an unbelievable player. God, you know, it really depends on Gettleman. What Gettleman does with the second overall pick, too, and the Browns are shopping their first overall pick. You know, if the Giants really think they want to address their needs, they want to go with Eli as their quarterback, they want Davis Webb to be the backup, then you know what? They should move the second pick overall and drop down to six. Maybe trade with the Jets and then take the running back from Penn State that I've been talking about forever. So that's what I would do. I've been saying it. I'll continue to say it. I'll continue to take Saquon, trade down, take Saquon Barkley, and I'll continue to say it. I love Barkley, and they haven't had a dominant running back in a long time, and I think the Giants need one. The Giants also need to draft for offensive line. They are going to need to, if they don't go for one of the big quarterbacks, then you go for the running back and you address the Everhalls. You cash that second pick in. You trade down and maybe get another pick and then draft for the Everhalls. Try to, on the defense and on the offensive line. That's what you do. So that's where I stand on it. As far, I do think Beckham is a selfish guy. So, but if you don't give it to him, you know, what exactly is your plan? I mean, it's tough. I'm not an Odell guy. I don't think he's not a quintessential Giant. I don't like him because he's too egotistical. But if they don't do it, what's the plan? So that's where I am on it. That's going to do for this podcast edition. I guess I could just thank myself because I decided to do this. Wasn't going to do a long podcast, but I did. And we covered a lot of stuff, so I really hope people will tune in because it's not often that I cover so much stuff by myself, but I felt like doing it. And, you know, definitely follow up for more. We'll do some more podcasts. Maybe we'll do a show and have JPG on for tonight. And we'll see. But I definitely like doing the podcast. I should do more of them because I'm good at it. So I'll definitely tune in when you can. Check out Hardheads Network. Listen to the podcast when you have the chance. If you do, thanks for tuning in. You can follow me at New York Puck on the Twitter, NEWYRKPUCK. And if you want more takes on hockey, on Rangers hockey, or you want to read about the Devils from Pass On, go to NewYorkPuck.com because I cover as much as I can. And I do a lot, but we're probably going to change it to just the Rangers and Devils. Maybe make it just the Hudson rivalry because I can't do the other teams. Yeah, it's just too much. We had a good run though, but thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you all next time. Have a nice night, everybody. Have a good day.